This is the second half of Paleo Cinema 81. Please download the first half before you listen to this one.
On the ice, it'll never go mad. There's lots of nice young ladies, and how I like to tease them. If they don't give way or say okay, I sit them on the ice and freeze them. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. We have some fun on the run in a one-horse open sleigh. Now once I went out walking with a pretty little miss. She said, I like you very much, and gave me one big kiss. Was a perfect little blonde and not so very old. She let me hold her in my arms, and by gum she was cold, 'cause she'd been sitting on the ice in the ice rink, sitting on the ice with her skates off. Oh, how hot she must have felt. She sat upon the ice and the ice began to melt. She was so young and pretty. What a blow that fall had dealt her, for we couldn't pick her up in the ordinary way. We had to bring a fire and melt her. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. We have some fun on the run in a one-horse open sleigh. Last night I went out for a drink down to the cherry tree. I didn't go there by myself, I took some pals with me. We landed home at 2:30, I rang the front door bell. The wife said, where have you been? And I said, you can go to bed, 'cause I've been sitting on the ice in the ice rink, sitting on the ice with my skates off. It's the finest fun I've ever had. Put it on the ice, it'll never go bad. The buttons bust off my trousers, I got into such a tangle. I said, heaven help the sailors on a night like this, and never let your braces dangle.
Okay, and we are back, and this time we're going to talk about another film from 1967. Yes, this time I'm still stuck in the 1960s, and it is Banning, starring Robert Wagner, Angela Comer, Jill St. John, Guy Stockwell, James Farentino, Susan Clark, Mike Killen, and way down the cast list, Gene Hackman.
Mm.
So, basically this film, I'll do the blurb for this one if you like, Simon.
Alrighty.
Okay, let me see. Mike Banning, kind of disgraced golfer, who was a rising star in the PGA Tour, and he's thrown off for cheating. He comes back and meets somebody he knew previously, a player he was in competition with called Jonathan Linus, who is a big wig at a very posh country club in Arizona. Hits him up for a job, and gets involved with the lives and the love lives of various interesting people there while trying to raise money to pay off a gambling debt for a man who helped him in his golfing career. That pretty much covers the basics of that. Not a big studio film, and it's a very forgotten film. And unfortunately, the only copy of it I could find was a not terribly wonderful VHS. So, Zom, what do you got on this one?
Well, I liked this movie because it starred Robert Wagner. And I think now, watching this movie, the full Wagner hadn't came out yet. But Robert Wagner seemed to develop this character or persona. And his speech, especially later on in his career, became very, very country club, Robert Wagner. So, Zom Wagner. I like this movie, and I'm glad that this is one that you brought to my attention that I had never even heard of. And one of the real hooks for me that really got me hooked is when you said, hey, Gene Hackman's in this. And I was like, oh, you know,
yeah.
Gene Hackman. So, and because I'd never heard of it, I thought, man, you know, I like Gene Hackman, you know, and I like Jill St. John's body and face, and yeah, her sexuality.
What's not to like about Jill St. John?
She's an actress who I will have to say a very young Zom. She gave me many happy moments.
Absolutely, and she's been married to Robert Wagner for over 20 years now.
And they, of course, after the Natalie Wood thing, you know, her untimely death, which was a real shame, it seemed like there was, of course, like in Hollywood even today, you know, a close-knit group of friends, and they all had met, and he had known Jill St. John for, I mean, quite a long time, and then they finally ended up getting together, actually getting married, and I think even still to this day, you know,
they are. They've been married for well over 20 years now.
But yeah, just a beautiful woman. The red hair.
A little underused as a Bond girl in Diamonds Are Forever, but I can forgive her that because, she's a very intelligent woman too, by all accounts.
Mm-hmm. And looks damn fine in a bathing suit.
Absolutely, and there are some very attractive women in this film in general. You got Susan Clarke, who I remember from being in Night Moves with Gene Hackman, of all people.
Right, and who is actually also Mrs. Alex Karras from Victor
Victoria.
Yeah,
Mongo's Mrs.
Yeah, Mongo's Mrs. And, and that's another one. They've been together forever, you know.
Mm. And, I've always had a kind of fondness for her as an actress, and I had a fondness for her chest when I saw Night Moves.
Very good.
Mm. And absolutely. And Angelina Coma, she was quite sexy in this one as well.
Yes. There were several ladies in this movie that liked the cut of Robert Wagner's jib.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were definitely interested in his putter.
Yes. Now, this is a question, and I didn't look it up because I thought, you know what, why look this stuff up when I have Terry Frost, the legend? I'm talking, this guy knows his shit.
Oh, shucks.
I'm going to ask you this, so I'm going to put you on the spot. You'll probably know right off. Howard St. John and Jill St. John, any?
No relationship at all. Howard St. John was in the stage production of Little Abner for a long time.
Ah, Little Abner.
And he appears in the movie version as well. So he had a long stage career playing those kind of pompous asshole characters that he did so well in this film. Very wealthy man and quite a dodgy and corrupt gentleman as well.
In real life, you're saying?
No, I'm saying in the film.
Oh, okay. I was like, oh, really? Okay.
No. In real life, he was a jobbing actor and kind of played mostly kind of stereotypical roles, but he got to do a really nice bit of drunk acting in this one as Jay Pallister Young, the kind of wealthy patriarch of the country club.
Right.
Let me see. Veteran theater actor from 1925. He started in as an actor and basically spent most of his time doing that. Did a number of movies, a lot of TV in the 50s, as a lot of New York stage actors did at the time in between engagements. But he kind of brings a certain smug, pompous dislikability to the role.
One thing I liked about not only in this movie but in the other one, when I went to look up a lot of the actors who I wasn't familiar with, is when they would post pictures of them. And some of the actors, say in the movie, were maybe 60, 70 years old or something. But then when they would show their IMDb picture, And they had been working since like 1920. And they'd show a picture of them where they're so young and they have the little pencil mustache and the hair slicked back just right. And I'm like, man, you know, that's awesome. It's so cool to see someone, you know, that started so far back and had went through all these stages of acting and just living in general. But by the time they reached the point of playing these roles, they had been acting for, God, 40 years or 50 years or something like that. Mm. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and doing it very, very well. I mean, you don't have a career that long unless you've learned your craft and your trade. You may end up being stereotyped into a certain range of characters, but within that, and in, particularly in this film, there's a number of decades of skill that get into this, which are quite impressive. And, I mean, Gene Hackman in this film is interesting. He's not in a lot of scenes, but playing Tommy Delgado, the drunken golf pro, who's the main golf pro in this. The interesting thing about that is Gene Hackman's playing like a washed-up, drunk golf pro who's being carried by various people in his career onwards because, you know, he's a golf pro, he's the man. Exactly the same age as Robert Wagner.
Right. But he just because of, you know, kind of a receding hairline and his looks and everything, he could really pull off playing, you know, a little bit older. And just, you know, just the fact that he's a really great actor, you know. He shows up very early in the movie, and then for a big chunk toward the middle, I almost forgot about. But then you know, you get to see him again, and he has a couple of he's not shortchanging him because the scenes that he's in are excellent. Now, this for everybody else, you know, this is around the time of like Bonnie and Clyde, which I think really put him on the map. And so you're getting that Gene Hackman, a younger guy. But I liked the character because, and all the characters in this movie. I grew up in a time, and my dad was very blue collar. I mean, he was a truck driver for like 30 years. But I remember vividly in the 70s, I had an aunt and an uncle who they had some money. I mean, they weren't like filthy rich, but they had some money, and they were a country club lodge kind of, you know, going out and doing things like that. And I was around that to an extent, and the almost, I hate to say phoniness, but almost like kind of an ugly phoniness and
the sense of entitlement and those sort of attitudes,
and even almost I don't know if I want to say a boredom, where they're just so fed up, but this is their life, and this is, you know, impressing people, and they know that, say, a Terry Frost or a Dr. Zom walk into one of these places, and we see this person or that person, and we're thinking, holy cow, you know, this guy really got it going on, where the other people that are there all the time that know them are looking at him like, you're not shit, you know, oh, you're a big blowhard, I know you're screwing this one's wife, you're doing this, they know all, it's almost like an incestuous a group of people, they know everybody's dirty secrets and just the dirt, and even though it was a beautiful place and beautiful clothes and everything, you know, it's a lot of ugliness.
Absolutely. And on that note, I'm going to play a little clip now. I've got a little bit where Mike Banning is kind of flirting with Carol, the Angela Como character, who ultimately he is enamored of, and just kind of getting into working out the social status of the people at the country club.
Mike, you must have thought I'd fallen off the edge of the world. Would you excuse us, please, Mrs. Linus?
Please, go ahead. I'm due at a poker game in the men's bar anyway. Oh, Daddy always wanted a boy.
Thank you.
Andy, you're a bundle of surprises. I didn't even know you knew my name, let alone my weaknesses.
The CIA of the El Presidente Country Club employees. And your weaknesses, Mr. Banning, are fairly obvious.
Whose aren't?
Now, don't be clinical. The club doesn't employ you as a psychoanalyst.
I know one thing they don't employ you as.
What?
A tennis pro. That's a nice tune. You know what it is?
I ought to. Cappy wrote it for me.
The lady not only does, she inspires. Tell me, do you have an official title outside of magician?
Well, what would you call someone who types a little, takes dictation if it's slowly given, plans parties, babysits, golf widow sits, protects the members from themselves, and sees to it that the employees and the members stay at arm's length?
Especially if the members are wives, like Mrs. Jonathan Linus.
Especially.
I'd call that someone a chaperone at large.
I'll put it on my letterhead.
I love the dialogue in this film. It's not, it doesn't kind of draw attention to itself, but it's kind of slyly witty, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of the things I took from this film were, we haven't talked about one of the most interesting characters yet, Kal-El, who is kind of a gangster. What would you call him, a standover man?
He was, yeah, but I mean, he was kind of like the Renaissance man of gangsters, because obviously he was his own collection agency. He was not above the threat and actually doing the dirty work himself. Kind of a loan shark, strong arm man.
Yeah. Did it all. Every time he came on the screen, and I think he had about two good scenes in the film, you just kind of go, oh, this guy is so cool. It's a shame he wants to kick the shit out of everybody.
And, of course, as we had spoke before off air, the greater majority of people, if you're a cinephile, you may not know who we're talking about as soon as you see – well, sometimes he has sunglasses on and a hat. As soon as he starts to speak – You'll say to yourself, I've seen this guy in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, Mike Kellen, he was a fantastic – again, he was a stage actor as well, did a lot of stage things and a hell of a lot of TV and other things. He was in westerns. He was in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yeah.
He was one of the main actors in a TV series I saw from way back called The Wackiest Ship in the Army, with Jack Warden in it. And he was a guy who ran the engines on the boat and stole any scene he was in. He was just a fantastic character actor.
Gene Hackman, not the classic handsome Hollywood Robert Wagner looks or anything like that, but just has this... I almost want to say a beautiful face, but because it's so unique. You know, he looks like the everyman. He could be the gangster. He could be the blue collar guy. You know, it seems like, and I'm speaking in generalities here, Hollywood today is cookie cutter, cookie cutter, cookie cutter. Washboard abs. They do a little steroids, get the washboard abs, get the muscles, have the, you know, the certain face, whereas they don't have the guys that have the rough, rugged, everyman, you know, beautiful in their ugliness is kind of almost what I want to say.
Yeah, I think that in some ways, Mike Kellen steals this film almost away from everybody except the beautiful women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that's... pretty good, pretty good, pretty accurate.
Yeah. Why don't we listen to Kal-El meeting up with Mike Banning and just laying out what needs to happen to make the money problems go away.
I'm your new dentist, Dr. Kal-El. Oh, yeah, you're due for a checkup.
Hey, I don't want to bet that I can't put this key in that lock from here. In one try.
Doc told me he gave you the $1,000.
Patient needs more work. $21,000 more. You owe it to him. You were just a skinny kid hustling caddy jobs, playing local tournaments. He financed you. He got you out on the circuit. He gave you a shot at the brass ring. He held your hand. Banning is entitled. $10. Now, come on, will you? It took me 18 months sitting in a Sing Sing cell, practicing 3 hours a day to get this trick down. That's the same kind of talent a guy like you develops out on the golf course. Come on, a lousy $10.
I'm fresh out of money.
Yeah, it's too bad. This place is full of marks. Excuse me. It's too bad for Doc. He needs the work done. He don't get expert attention. The teeth are going to fall apart, along with the jawbone. The whole head. $5.
Okay. $5.
That is $21,005. You got 3 weeks.
I couldn't raise that much money in 3 weeks if my life was riding on it.
It is, kid.
It'd take me all summer to set up enough marks.
Who says you gotta knock them off one at a time? You go after one big hole, you set up a Calcutta.
This club put a lock on Calcutta's back in 61.
Yeah? I heard there's a law against adultery, too. Maybe that's why it's so unpopular.
That's Khalil. Just a terrific little, not quite a cameo, but little character piece. And film buffs like yourself and I, I'm really live for those little character bits in movies that just kind of take something slightly out of the ordinary.
He had a pretty good, the key trick.
Yeah,
I liked how he, you know, he could have very easily just went in and, you know, in any other movie or whatever and told Robert Wagner, you know, with the nose bent and the ear and, you know, hey, you know, you owe this money and I'm going to come back and break your legs or something like that. Mm. But he almost plays with Banning because he knows that Banning, first of all, needs money. Second of all, probably maybe has a little bit of a gambling thing, and he just kind of goes, come on, $5, come on. Mm. And he doesn't let it go. I mean, even when Banning says, no, I don't have any money, you know, or whatever, and he still, as he's talking, he's pacing off the steps, and he's saying, come on, you know, you got to let me try. I've done this trick. You know, I've been practicing. You know, I loved it. And he had a really good scene with the dentist. Who I forgot to look up his name, but I remember him from another guy.
Logan Ramsey.
As soon as you see this guy, if you do not know who Logan Ramsey is, as soon as you see him in this movie, you'll be like, I know exactly who it is. I've seen things.
Yeah, the other thing about Logan Ramsey is his wife Anne Ramsey was the mother in Throw Mama from the Train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also spotted, and I think. Now, I didn't look this up, but I'm almost 100%. This was just a glimpse, a brief role. Yeah. Maybe one.
I know what you're going to say.
Don Stroud?
Don Stroud, yeah.
Yeah, Don Stroud. At the beginning, I was like, shit, there's Don Stroud. And I kept thinking, okay, Don Stroud's in this movie. But he's in it. Just it must have been it was a really bit part.
It was one line, Don Stroud in there. But I think he was a studio player at the time and came on, did what they asked him to, maybe got a trip to Arizona out of it, did his line and went home again. Yeah. But and the women in this film are interesting because the characters are complex and they're intelligent. There's not really a dumb blonde in this film.
Right.
They've each got their own lives and there's a backstory to each of them, which is interesting where a lot of these films, particularly from some time like 1967, there are a lot of kind of, you know, pop-up centerfold kind of chicks in this one.
Right.
But, I mean, the Jill St. John character in particular, sexually aggressive to the point where she puts off Banning by just being forthright about what she wants and who she wants it from.
Right.
But and of course the Susan Clark character being the wife of Jonathan Linus, the guy who betrayed Banning in the past, and she's kind of made an accommodation to her husband's proclivities and the nature of the environment she lives in, where she's got a certain worldly wisdom about it.
Right. It's as I said, you know, in the other part about it almost being an a big, you know, like an incestuous group. The one movie that came to mind that sort of reminded me of how these people were was, I think it was called The Chase with Marlon Brando and Robert Redford, mm-hmm. and Jane Fonda, yeah. where they're the elite of the town, or the elite of the, you know, the country club, you know, comparing both movies, but they're almost like swingers. You could see that, you know, this one had slept with this one's wife, this one had slept with this. Everybody knows it. They even have ongoing affairs going on. The wife knows it, but she kind of, or the husband knows because his wife, he's you know, cuckold husband, and she's out doing this and that. One interesting thing, like the Jill St. John character, I know at least two times, maybe three, where people almost – straight out compared her to a man, or in how she acted. You know, I think Robert Wagner said something about it was one of the people. There were two guys with her at the table eating, and he said something about how was it? What was it like growing up as a man, or whatever? And she said something about, well, I don't know. You'll have to tell me what it was like growing up to be like a woman, because he was kind of effeminate.
I'll give you a bit of a tip. In the intro to the last 20 Paleo Cinemas, mm-hmm. there are two movie audio quotes from this film.
Really?
There's the one about cause and effect in the outside world, which is Tommy Delgado talking about the country club.
Yeah.
And there's the I always envied you that role, one with Jill St. John in it.
I would have never, until you just said that, because I've heard that so many times.
Yeah.
It just goes, you know, past me. Because when I heard it, I hadn't seen this movie. Now I'll go back and I'll be like, you know, God damn it, that Terry Frost, he's right. He's very clever.
It's all a bit meta.
Very, very meta indeed.
Absolutely. But I've had a great fondness for this film since I first saw it many moons ago. And I kind of, it's a bit like for me, 2 weeks in Another Town with Kirk Douglas. It's a movie about redemption,
mm-hmm.
and a character's redemption, not necessarily in a very straightforward and all the loose ends tied up kind of Hollywood way, but, you know, somebody getting their shit together, working out what they want in life, and having a little confidence in their ability to move past the current hassles and to get it.
Right, and the Banning character, I mean, for a while there, you know, I wasn't sure. I thought, you know, okay, is this just going to be a basically, like, this guy's a grifter, and he's a golf hustler, he's a gambling hustler or whatever, just looking for the edge and everything. And I thought, you know, okay, I see where this is going. This guy is just, you know, he is what he appears to be is what he is. And okay, they're going to go with that. And like, there were, you know, a couple of sympathetic characters in this movie, but for the most part, there were a lot of shits in this movie. You know, people that were just kind of, you know, they were just shitty people, a lot of them.
Yeah, the James Ferrantino character playing the assistant golf pro, and Guy Stockwell playing the kind of blonde god of the country club, in almost in a sense. Howard St. John playing Jay Pallister Young, the patriarch. The interesting thing is they threw Sean Garrison's character, Richard Tyson, in there, the guy who does the doubles golf with Banning at the end.
Right.
Basically, he was the Diogenes of the whole thing, the only honest man.
Yeah.
In the movie, and it's a kind of understated role, kind of quite an intelligent kind of guy who, a stand-up guy when it comes down to the crunch.
Well, something I'll throw this in because, you added that this was one of the few sports movies that you liked. It seems, as I was saying before, being an older gentleman, not mm-hmm. as old as Robert Wagner, but growing up in the 70s, I remember golf basically being more of a rich man's game or a country club game for people who were more of the elite class or, upper class, upper middle class. And nowadays it seems that it's become, especially with like Tiger Woods getting so much attention and bringing national attention to the sport. A lot of my friends play golf. I've never gotten into it. I have no patience for chasing a little ball, hitting it as hard as I can, and then chasing it, and it going to the left and to the right, no matter what I do. But I will say this. It's not a movie where you are overwhelmed by the amount of golf in the movie. You probably have more golf in Caddyshack or something like that. But
Go ahead. What I was going to say is I think the people who made Caddyshack have seen this film. There are little bits of it where, like with Tyson, the character, where I got a very Caddyshack kind of feel about the attitude people take to the game.
Yeah, I think maybe also they kind of took their inspiration from this movie and just kind of, made it a little bit more gonzo. Which was great because Caddyshack's always been, a pretty funny movie. But the actual golf scenes in this movie, it's almost like in the movie The Hustler with Jackie Gleason and Paul Newman playing pool. They're shot in such a way that, if somebody can make me interested in watching golf, and you're not watching. Of course, if you're watching golf on TV, it's a lot longer. They have to walk to the holes and do all this. But the scenes that were shot where they were playing golf in the Calcutta, especially in the Calcutta at the end, it kept me interested and it kept me kind of on the edge of my seat, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's that really cool bit too where Robert Wagner is going to do a chip shot over a line of trees.
Yeah.
And so he waves the people aside with his arm so the audience the spectators get it out of the way. And then he takes the cigarette out of his mouth and just throws it on the ground.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if you left that out. I love these movies back when, everybody smoked. My God, like I said, I grew up in the late 60s and the 70s and everybody smoked and he takes this nice drag on the cigarette, flips it to the ground and then hits the shot.
Takes the shot. Yeah.
It was kind of cool, like I said, I know from the TV show Heart to Heart and watching Wagner later on in his career, he almost became a caricature of himself. The way he talked and everything, he had that voice. And you don't get that in this that much. He does a really good job, and it's not the Robert Wagner caricature. You can see it there a little bit, but it hasn't gotten full-blown. Because a lot of his work, I think, later on, he was pretty big for quite a while with the studio system. It was like Prince Valiant and stuff like that. And then when the real method actors and people like that came along, I think he sort of got cast aside and he wasn't getting a ton of work. So then later on he got more involved in TV and stuff like that. But when I first heard Robert Wagner, I was like, Robert Wagner, but I really thought he did a good job in this, and it wasn't the cliche, the Robert Wagner guy.
I'll tell you my Robert Wagner story. Once upon a time in the 1970s, I was working, I was like 17 or something, working full time, and A Texas Thief was on TV in the afternoons,
mm-hmm.
about 2 p.m., this is before VCRs. And I got to the stage where I thought, I don't like this job I'm doing, so I'm going to quit it so I can stay home for a while and watch the rest of the season of It Takes a Thief with Robert Wagner, because I just, you know, I don't like the job. The Dole was paying pretty much okay money, you know, welfare was paying money, just enough for me to survive on, so I could spend the afternoons just grooving on really cool Robert Wagner stuff.
Well, I will say this for Robert Wagner. The chicks must love his style because he got some fine-looking ladies. On the other hand, James Ferentino, once he got a lady, sometimes he didn't know when to let go of them.
Yeah.
Now, and I hate to – I think he did a really good job, and I remember seeing him in a lot of TV growing up.
Yeah.
Never had a problem with him as an actor. And when a relationship goes sour, often things can either get blown out of proportion as, you know, I'm going to get you, you're going to get me, I'm going to say that you did this or did that. Or, on the other hand, some things can get blown out of proportion where if I can't have you, no one will, and you might stalk Frank Sinatra's daughter. And I think also when you combine with that a substance abuse problem, you might not find it too hard to believe some of the things that were said about James Ferentino.
Absolutely. Not a bad actor, not a fantastic actor either. But, I mean, I think he found his natural niche in TV. And like a lot, I get a little fed up with the podcast and the radio because every second person I talk about ended up dying of alcohol poisoning or having a bad life because of certain problems with drugs and things like that. So I'm going to spend a couple of months de-emphasizing that part of certain people's careers. But I mean, it's a commonality that, I mean, you see it in life too. There are people who are diminished by those kind of problems, and it's just an immensely sad thing.
Well, and not only that, but that's one of the reasons that I kind of said, you know, who knows? Because, like I said, I've been in relationships where when it goes sour, you know, someone might say, oh, you know, well, you did this, and it's bullshit. Or, you know, but I've also seen friends and whatever where, you know, they've kind of gotten out of their head. But he became so well known for that incident. And, you know, it's kind of a shame because all I ever saw him do pretty much was TV. And probably some films, but mostly TV. But from reading his biography, I mean, the guy really got a lot of props and a lot of respect for his stage acting, and won some awards, you know, for Streetcar Named Desire and some other movies. Now, I will say this, and I'm going to get – this is still, you know, talking about Ferentino, but Robert Wagner must have had a hell of a punch because he could knock every speck – of shaving cream off a man's face. It's just like one punch. Now, and literally hit him so hard that he is covered in shaving cream, but his opponent has none on his face, whereas at the beginning, the opponent looked like almost like Santa Claus with a big white beard. I loved that. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I think that may be what we call a continuity error.
You know, I saw these glops on Wagner, and then I looked and I'm like, wait a minute, that guy had a face full of shaving cream, and now there's nothing. Loved
it. Yeah, absolutely. The other bit of Robert Wagner trivia is, for a lot of the 1950s, he was having a relationship with Barbara Stanwyck, who was about 20 years older than him at the time.
And, you know, that surprised me, and I don't maybe I'm reading too many stupid books that my sister, you know, I love my sister, but she likes gossip and likes books like Hollywood Babylon, Hollywood Babylon 2, Hollywood Babylon 3, and, you
Hollywood
know,
Babylon 2, Electric Boogaloo,
Electric Boogaloo, and though she got me one, I think maybe over last Christmas or for my birthday or something. She tends to buy gifts for me that she would like, and then we could discuss it. And, you know, I saw a lot of schlongs like Aldo Ray schlong and Roddy McDowell schlong, and who had the biggest, you know, because these guys maybe posed for, you know, artistic nudes or whatever before they became famous. And the one thing is, you know, I read some of that stuff and I think that, wow, that's kind of different, you know, because back then they would cover up a lot of stuff. But I also read it with a lot of skepticism because, you know, I really don't like people assassinating others' characters when the person is dead and can't defend themselves. And when I heard that Robert Wagner had had an affair with Barbara Stanwyck, who was like 20 years older, you know, one of the things I thought was, well, you know, I thought I read in Hollywood Babylon that she was a lesbian, you know. But then she also there was a very famous actor that she was married to or in love with for
Robert Taylor,
and he got killed, right?
No, Robert Taylor. They worked together after they divorced.
Oh, okay, I thought he got killed. Or something, but that's.
No, that's not the case. But the only reason I mentioned the relationship between the two was that it's mentioned in his autobiography, which is quite a nice little read. It skips over Banning very successfully. I don't think it was one of his more fond movie-making experiences, but it's one I kind of like. But, yeah, he goes into detail about it and has some very sweet things to say about Barbara Stanwyck.
One thing I was a big fan of the TV show Big Valley, which was a, you know, West American Western series, starring Lee Majors, Linda Evans, Barbara Stanwyck, Richard Long, and Peter Breck. And so I grew up watching her as the matriarch of the Barkley family. And I remember reading and seeing interviews with Linda Evans and with Lee Majors talking about how great she was and how she taught, you know, they owed all, just, I wouldn't say everything, but a lot to her because they were so young and she taught them and she was, you know, stern with them and said, you know, hey, you need to learn your lines. Don't come here unless, you know, and she taught them the craft. And so, you know, seeing her, acting that way with young actors, you know, it's admirable. It kind of reminded me, and I'm not sure if this is the same kind of thing, but first thing I thought of was like Shelley Winters. They always said that she really helped a lot of young actors and had some trysts with some of the young actors also.
Yeah. Doesn't hurt to double up there.
Hey, man. Yeah. What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yep, okay. So basically we both enjoyed the film a lot, and I think people should try to find it. It'd be lovely if it got a DVD release. Very happy if it did. Yeah.
Maybe one of the – if you know, we can all hope that someday that a lot of these forgotten films will all be available, you know, and remastered so that they – because I can imagine – like I said, when I watched Hotel, I watched a really good – copy of it, a really good print, and it was just beautiful. And this movie I could see being the same way because of the costumes, the and at that time, you know, there was a lot of color in the things that people wore, and they're at this country club and the cars and the atmosphere and everything. I think it would look really good.
It would. And the other thing we didn't mention, the last thing I'll mention on this is, did you notice this film was nominated for an Oscar?
No, I did not.
The theme song, romantic song, Quincy Jones wrote it with Bob Russell, The Eyes of Love, was nominated for an Oscar.
I didn't know the Oscar. I just saw that in my notes, but I didn't know that it was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah. The other thing about
really
the song.
Really good, though.
Quincy Jones, beautiful soundtrack by Quincy Jones. And the other thing is, if you go to YouTube and you type in The Eyes of Love, Gil Bernal, who's the guy who sang it, the only clip you can find of this song is an old guy in a flat cap dancing with his pussycat to the song.
Nice.
I recommend people do that. So you type in The Eyes of Love and maybe Banning as well, and you'll get this like homemade YouTube clip of this old guy dancing with his pussycat.
Hey, the song lives on with the pussies.
It does. And the soundtrack was never released. The only release of it at all was an EP for the people who were nominated for Oscars, so the people who were voting for the Oscars got an EP of it. Hmm.
One thing just to add, and you know, this is probably the end of my notes, and we're getting near the end of this wondrous occasion.
Yes.
Guy Stockwell. I did not know. I saw him in a lot of TV. Again, this entire cast, when I went back through the IMDb, a great majority of the people worked a lot, but a great majority of the people worked in TV that were in this movie. Yeah. I know Guy Stockwell. I'd seen him in the remake of Bojest with Leslie Nielsen and Telly Savalas.
That's where I remember him from, too. Yeah.
Doug McClure. He was Bojest. I did not know for years and years and years. When I brought up his picture, I was like, wait a minute. They're bringing up pictures of Dean Stockwell. I don't need Dean Stockwell. I need Guy Stockwell. Didn't know they were brothers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he appeared in an episode of Quantum Leap. I'm not sure. Mm. He did appear in an episode of Quantum Leap as well with Dean Stockwell.
Well, if you would have put them, like when I first saw it and I didn't know that, I was like, you know, no, I need Guy, not Dean. But then when I read that they were brothers and I saw pictures of them side by side, I'm like, yep, they're a brother. I mean, when you look knowing that, you can see all the similarities.
Absolutely. Anyway, we're going to end it there, and I'll leave the feedback till next time around. I'll double up on it next time because we've had such a good time. This is going to be an extraordinarily long podcast, and I don't at all regret that. So, Zomp, thanks a lot for coming on and being the first guest apart from Sal, who's a very important guest herself.
Absolutely.
And you and I will have to do this again, man.
I had an exceptional time, and I just wanted to tell you that I really appreciate everything that you do. I really appreciate that you asking me to be on this show. And I'm glad that Facebook exists and that all this internet thing, this big, huge internet world exists, because it brings West Virginia and Australia together, and the meeting of the minds. Maybe it can happen again someday.
Absolutely, and we will talk on Skype more regularly, mate.
Definitely. This is Zom Wagner from Paleo Cinema saying Zom Oot.
And this is me from Paleo Cinema saying it is now 12:41 in the morning and I am going to bed. And everybody, I will be back in 2 weeks with the continuation of the A to Z project. Again, thanks, Zom, and everybody enjoy your movie watching until next time around. Bye.